Thank the Light, everyone. I'm Desmond, and this is my hetero life mate,
Fatty the Chef.
What's up, y'all?
This is your source for Wheel of Time, discussion, talks, book talks, deep dives, and all things that are amazingly One Power related.
So eventually we're going to get into episode 5, but before that, Fatty has a few things he wants to catch us up on from the first 4 episodes.
Hey nerds, what's up? So just a few things I want to say. Thank Desmond, besides the Light, because dude, he got me into this and he's makes me sound really good, and it's awesome to be having a lot of fun doing this. Is something I've been doing since I was 15. An actual shout out to my cousin Jeremy Gaines. He's the one who gave me these when I was 15 or so, and was like, man, these are good books, and we've been reading them, discussing them ever since, and think we're heading the right direction. So I'm really stoked about that. Jeremy, what's up, man? Thank you. I hope everybody else likes it. Feel free to give us suggestions. I think it could change anytime, you know, like little intros and outros. Intro, I love. The outros, it's weird, but I think it fit for, you know, the actual episode. Anyways, I have some corrections for myself and a few things that I missed on the last pod. I do feel that the Trollocs will get better. They're already great, but I think they'll get more diverse and kind of even scarier as they go along. I'm excited as they get more budget.
Are they going to get grosser?
Maybe. They may get more
no!
gross.
No!
They're already pretty gross. So.
They're gross.
They stink like rotten. I wish I remembered. They smell like rotten. Fetid
piss
and mud, basically.
Yeah, Robert Jordan probably wrote 2 pages about.
And apparently your Thanksgiving sucked, because I was like, hey man, how was your Thanksgiving, like halfway through the pod, and you're like, I gotta pee. I just didn't answer. I don't know if that was on purpose.
That was all editing magic.
I loved it. It was great. I guess he's gonna pee. Also, they were kind of acting like Loghain was closer to Rand's age, and then they start talking at the end. I noticed that, and you say he's 8 years old, too old or something like that.
Whose age? Sorry, I missed that.
Like Nynaeve and Loghain are both kind of too old to be the dragon. They've glossed over it a little bit, but she's like, oh, you're 26 to Nynaeve. And then she says something to Loghain, and she's like talking about, oh, he's the right age. And then she gets there and she's like, no, he's too old. He's like 20.
Okay.
Which is, you know, too old to be the dragon because he was born 20 years ago or so. But she's still kind of second guessing herself, it seems like. But, you know, there's not supposed to be a lot of guys who can channel in the world at any one time.
There's also a lot of like, we don't know where she came from. She was an orphan, so we don't actually know her exact birthday or his birthday. Like, there's a lot of just like, oh, this kid just kind of showed up on our doorstep. So he's 20-ish.
Yeah, I think she's a bigger kind of, what do they like to call them? Mary Sue's than Egwene is. because they're all really like closely aided in the power once they've hit their full strength. Let's see what else. I do agree with your the musics and the songs are kind of important. It tells the history and it kind of adds a layer of depth to the show, which I do like for the most part. You can really see there was one point when they're telling the story of Menetherin and they're singing the song, and you see kind of Matt as they're singing the song kind of like look off. They're all kind of like listening to the song, but you see Matt's face. It's like he's remembering what actually happened that day. Because in one of his lives, he was there and he died there. You'll find that out later. So you can cut that out if you want. But I'd say you can see he's kind of remembering differently than the others. You see the song kind of hits home with him a little bit more in his face. I thought he kind of just has this look like, oh, man, I remember that. Why do I remember that? You know, kind of deja vu. You can cut this out, too, but everybody's going to know. Spoiler alert. They're recasting Matt in the second season.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Because they already got up for a second season before they even released this. I heard they're already starting to shoot it, some scenes. And he was like, okay, so this is going to be like Game of Thrones, and I don't want to commit 15 years of my life to this.
Oh.
Basically. So I'm really starting to like his character, but I've heard the guy they picked to replace him, he's from the show The Witcher. I think he's the bard from The Witcher. Like, his name's Donald Finn, the guy they're changing him to from Barney Harris. And he just didn't want to commit. He's like, you know, this is going to run. He's like, oh, you guys got picked up for the second season. And Rafe Judkins, the main guy who's kind of writing it and stuff, he's like, I picture this going from start to finish in about 8 seasons, even though there's like 14 books. 15 books if you count the prequel, but 14 books like in the main story. And he's just like, man, he goes, I loved it. He's like, but I don't want to commit my whole career to this, basically.
I'll withhold judgment.
I'm super bummed because he's my favorite.
I'll withhold judgment because the character's all in the book, hopefully. But
right.
Something just perfectly lovably scoundrelly about Barney Harris.
Yeah, I really, at first I was kind of like, okay, the look is right and I didn't love him. And then I just was like, okay, they're kind of keeping him the same, but they changed his backstory a little bit. But I do believe that with what Matt goes through in this book, like you kind of, it's like that scoundrel thing. If you love the scoundrel like us, you kind of like, you see where he's going to redeem himself. But if you don't, you're kind of like, oh man, like he's going to be a bad dude. Like he's not going to be a part of their hero group forever because he just keeps getting, you saw in last night's episode, he started just getting, like he's getting pale, he's getting sick, he's super paranoid, you know. So it's a bummer that they're changing him, but like I said, I'm withholding it. Like he is changed a lot physically by the dagger in the books, so I'm hoping that like they just kind of, the dude looks enough like him. Also, did you watch the part I was talking about when Perrin kills his wife in the first episode?
Yes, go ahead and catch the audience up. Tell them what we're talking about.
So I've been looking around online and stuff to see if anybody's talking about it. Everybody's like, oh, it's Perrin's wife at Darkthrone, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, dude, when he turns around and about cuts her in half, she has her hammer drawn up over her head. There ain't no Trollocs. I'm pretty sure she's going to whack him. She's going to kill him, or try to anyway. And like you could see, it makes sense because when he's like trying to hug her before, she's kind of like, He's like, why didn't you come to the inn with everybody else? And she just doesn't really say anything. And it's like, because she knows what's coming.
Yeah. For a minute, I thought, you know, I don't know who has what powers and what they're capable of. But for a minute, I thought Egwene was going to straight up tell Perrin that she was going to kill it. Like when they were in the, we'll get to this episode in a minute. When they were in the tent.
It's like, it's not your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I was going to get an answer to your question without diving too deep.
I was saying, anybody who's watching, go check out episode one at like minute 42 and just tell us what you think.
And yeah, I'm really curious to see where that goes because, you know, did they just give us that quick little like visual so that we can imagine in our mind, like, okay, Perrin's not a total monster, or are they really set? So, I mean, the actress keeps showing up in flashbacks. So
like his dreams and stuff. Yeah. But she's always like, I think that's like his wolf power that seems to be developing. It's not connected to the power, but he really gets a lot of stuff from it. Like his sense of smell really improves, his hearing. He can hear like a dog, you know, what else? He's very strong in his own way, you know, Perrin is. And so the world of dreams is connected to his wolf, how he can communicate with the wolves. And that's where the wolves go when they die to the dreamland, dream world. And you can kind of tell the future events. Like if you learn how to interpret stuff right and what's going on, you can kind of learn a lot from the world of dreams. And I'm hoping that that's what they're setting up, which is really cool. Would be really cool because there's a lot of it in the books.
Yeah. I'm already excited for our off season rewatch. Like I've been,
yeah,
just kind of having episodes on in the background and I'll look up every once in a while. And there's a lot of little looks and moments and things that they're really setting up. There's some good little Easter eggs, if you will, letting you know what's coming if you pay attention.
That's why I'm saying a lot of this stuff, because I want you to get it kind of in the back of your head because you haven't read the books. And so when we do that rewatch, you're like, hey, what about this? And I want to talk more about like the scenery and the writing and stuff as well, because I think they've done such a good job. Because like, okay, I'll wait till we get into the episode till we start talking about. But hold
on. No,
I still have a few more things. Sorry, I'm trying to hurry. Manithurin, Eridol, their connection. You know, they talk about it also. Just the old blood. That's why there's so many of these like really important to Beren and the Two Rivers. I screwed up on the Ajahs last episode. So the Blues. They are not diplomats. They run the spy network. They're really concerned with information, the dragon, world events to, you know, keep everybody like getting along and no wars, stuff like that. Every Aja kind of has their own cause / specialty. So the Reds, obviously, they don't have warders almost ever because they don't like men in general. And plus they hunt men who can channel. That's their whole goal in life. Whites are all about philosophy and higher truth, the white Aja. Grays are definitely politics, mediation, and like meditation. Green almost always have multiple warders, usually are married to them.
Oh.
Or you know, that's why the one they're like all, you know, they're all together, you know. She's a green Aja. That's why they're like all going to the tent together in the one episode. The yellows are dedicated to healing, and they already have heard about Nangi, apparently, as you see in the next episode. And then the one that nobody's really talking about that's not supposed to exist is the black Aja, and they're obviously dedicated to the dark one. They're bad guys.
Dark arts.
And then the last thing before the episode, I'm sorry, I'm getting long-winded. The five powers. It's Robert Jordan and his gender roles. Men generally, it's not that. It's just he does a bad job of explaining it in the books. Men are generally stronger in the power. Like when they say stronger, like raw power, they can generally, without training, draw more destructive power through their magic. That doesn't always mean they know how to use it better or do stuff with it. That just means that they can hold more of it. So they're not really stronger. And women are, you know, like more deft, more delicate, where men will usually use one or two powers at a time. There are many women who are strong enough to use three, four, or all five powers to do stuff. As you're seeing with Nynaeve, when she heals, she uses everything. But generally, they're equal in the spirit power. Men are stronger in earth. Women are stronger with water. Men are stronger in fire. Women are stronger with air. So,
and now, moving on to what this episode is all about. Number five, Blood Calls Blood, written by Celine Song, directed by Sally Richardson. And, oh, this episode, I'm trying not to be too hard on this episode. I think my problem with this episode is that there was so much to chew on with the first four of us doing all four at once, that this one 60 minutes of content was, and it was a slower episode anyways. Like, it's definitely like a breather episode. Like, we just had a big war. We're just going to chill out. We'll give you some information, but take some deep breaths, everybody. So we start with a month later. Well, we start with the funeral of everyone who died in the battle that ended episode four.
Yeah, and they lost some. Oh, I don't know how many of them were Aes Sedai's. I was trying to kind of look around, but
a full wheels were, well, they weren't all Aes Sedai's, but a full.
Right. I'd say 10 Aes Sedai and their warders. Probably there was, what, 30 holes in the ground? So,
and those
I'd
were
say at least
all Aes Sedai's and warders. Like, there were no just random, like they don't have any henchmen that they walk around with.
No, they have an army, but generally they're in Tar Valon to protect the city and kind of keep the peace. So, usually when they travel like that, they might have a small contingency of warriors, but pretty much everyone who was there, I think, were Aes Sedai and warders, short of like people who are, you don't see, like, you know, people who are carrying water and dealing with the horses and putting up the tents and all that shit, you know, they have servants or whatever type of people.
So then we immediately, we see the funeral, we jump to credits, we come back, it's a month later, which, another thing, like I said, it seems a little early for a jump like that, or a little,
well, the thing about it is like, I think in the books, I've really, like, so they're cutting out, when they get separated, they're separated for much longer, and they all kind of end up in Tar Valon or heading towards, I think they all meet up in Tar Valon. I can't remember. I got to do some research on that. Rand and Matt end up going through, they meet up in Verlon, I think, is where they all kind of get reunited, and then they're moving towards Tar Valon, and then at one point, Matt and Rand are in Camelin, which is like the capital of like what country that the Two Rivers is in. And the daughter heir, Matt, or Rand, crawls up a fence to look at Loghain because they're bringing him through the city because he's been caught and gentled. And they're bringing him to the city like they bring him into Tar Valon in this episode, how he's like all caged and stuff. And Matt and Rand are kind of sitting in the window. That happens in Camelin, but Rand's alone and he falls inside of the palace, and he's found by the daughter heir and the prince, her brother. And so they're cutting that out completely. So I am sure Elaine will probably show up in somewhere because she's a very important part of the story. They're just not introducing her the way I thought they would.
Okay. So yeah, if there's, like you said, there's about 15 books and they're looking at about 8 seasons. So I guess it would make sense that we're already halfway through the first book.
Right, because there's a lot that goes on, but it's, again, it's, you know, it's more informative to the overall story. So they're really condensing it, and then they're just in like, oh, they got separated, and all the stuff that they kind of went through alone on their journeys is important, but they've managed to capture it in other places, and then cool, now we're in Tar Valon, because if they wanted, it would take three episodes to get them apart and then bring them all back together. But the things that happen when they are apart are happening in slightly different ways, but they're staying true enough to the source material that I'm super stoked. The stuff that they've had to cut hasn't mattered that much to me, and it's been for story progression, and they're still really hitting you hard with the stuff you need to know.
We saw enough walking in Lord of the Rings. We get it.
Yes, we don't need a walking simulator. So, right? That's the thing. And, you know.
So you've sold me, and this is where your book knowledge comes in handy, because I was thinking like, well, maybe I feel like they could have done some of this character progression on the road, and we could have still gotten here at the end of five or maybe the beginning of six. But I think it's after you said it, I think it's better this way, that they rush there and then do whatever road progression they were going to do in the books in town.
You can. Well, that's the thing to me. It's like I said, it's like if you don't get past the first season, none of this is going to matter anyway. So you hit the stuff you really got to hit, you can always fill in backstory when you need some filler in an episode. Like, hey, we need 20 minutes. While he's contemplating his journey, let's show this that happened in the first book. And it's okay, because I think like Matt's descent into madness is much longer. It's much more gradual until it's not. And so they've really just kind of jumped to he's really going downhill. Rand did look a little pale and dirty too in this episode when they're kind of coming to their last place. And it's like, I'm thinking that he channeled to knock that door off in the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I'm not sure yet on that one. Like I said, I feel like at least 10 or 12 Aes Sedai and their warders died. But you can also see immediately after they gentled Loghain, every scene that you've seen after him, he's just like, you know, he's like, they've taken a part of his will to live away. It's obvious.
Well, and Rand had to have channeled. I mean, the way that what's her name described that door.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no getting a like channel, or like whether he's another wolf boy, he's not, or whatever. he definitely did something, and yeah, for his first time. But yeah, he looks a little bit more road weary, where Matt looks like something's eating him from the inside out.
More like Moraine when they were traveling and she was channeling to keep everybody strong, kind of like that.
So everyone gets, so Rand and Matt get to Tar'Valon.
Yes, Tar'Valon.
Tar'Valon.
They're pronouncing it a little bit different, I think, but Tar'Valon is how I would.
Which is where the White Tower, is it the White Tower?
Yeah, that's where the
White Tower is. So Matt and Rand show up, Moraine, Egwene, and no, Egwene and Perrin don't make it. Everybody from the battle, everyone who survives from the battle makes it. Perrin and Egwene look like they're going to make it. It looks like we're having a great reuniting in Tar'Valon, but they get caught by the White Cloaks. And whoo!
Now, this definitely does happen in the books. They get separated. I thought it was before they got hooked up with Tuathun, the traveling people in the books. And I really hope that Perrin ends up with this guy. The reason why the wolves are following, there's a reason why they're following. It's not just because they've connected with Perrin. At least I hope that's not the only reason. Because
so we'll take a little bit of a detour from the way that the TV show went. Let's just focus on Perrin and Egwene for a minute, and then we'll go into Tar'Valon. And we'll catch everybody up there, because they're like a good soap opera. They're jumping back and forth. But we're going to just focus on one story at a time.
We'll jump back and forth, too, because I have notes. But yeah, Egwene and Perrin, like, that's definitely in the books. And it's believe it or not, it's an even gnarlier kind of chunk of the books than they're doing. They're you know, they scrub her up, but they beat the crap out of her, too, because they're trying to make her channel.
Okay.
But they don't necessarily think that she can channel so much. But that is one of the things. He's like, are you not a young Aes Sedai and your warder? And it's not just, what was his name? Child.
Vala? Varda?
Oh, Child Valda. He's a dirtbag.
Yeah, he's definitely got a, well, he kind of spills his guts. He's not bearing the lead too much, that he's like, it, well, it's kind of a good, so he is Liandrin's opposite. Like, Liandrin is like, men are gross, we need to kill them all. And Child Valda is like, you witches are gross, I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah, they really don't like people who touch the power. They really don't like it at all. And right now, it's basically only females that touch the power. So that's who he focuses on. Yeah. And like I said, some of them are more like, the one guy's like, hey, you better find an Aes Sedai. Like, I don't like them, but they're the only way you're going to live. So he's not stupid, you know?
I'm going to make a prediction that part of his beef is that he wants to channel so friggin' bad that
I like that.
It tears him up inside.
I hope that that's the case.
Or his mom, maybe his mom was a channeler. Like,
that's what I was thinking. They don't really hit why, you know, they kind of generalize why some people become children, you know, and stuff like that. And they're like, well, he obviously became one probably because his family was killed by some sort of power, dark, whatever. There's a lot of White Cloaks in the book, but I think they're just going to kind of generalize them as bad guys.
So yeah, he basically gives them an ultimatum. He brings in Perrin, chains him down, says, I'm going to kill one of you. Either you channel and prove that he's a witch, or prove that you're a witch and I'll kill you, or I'm going to torture him to death. Like,
and then I'll let you go, because I guess then I'll know you can't
change. Yeah, and so he leaves them alone.
Sounds like some great decision. you have really good choices to make.
And we see Perrin's eyes glow gold a couple times as he's getting tortured and getting angry. So then Child Valda comes back in and says, "What's up?" And she's like, "Well, I'm not going to channel because I can't." And so he starts torturing Perrin. And then she just gives this little sprite.
The cutest little fireball.
The cutest little just ping. And it just kind of touches Child Valda. And he basically reacts just like that. Like, "Aw, that's so cute." So you can channel, just not very well. And so he's coming over to kill the witch. And then that's when Perrin wolfs out. I mean, he does it. He doesn't change or anything like that, but he gets a big burst of strength and breaks his chains. And Child Valda is like,
"No, he doesn't break the chains. You didn't see? She channels and burns his ropes."
Oh,
the
fireball right
in the chest was kind of a distraction.
That's right. That's right.
Well, because that's all she could manage. She was initially trying to just fucking blow him through the wall, but all she could get was a little meow. And but then she was like, "Okay, burn his ropes off."
I did notice that. I just didn't. So she sent. So was the first little fireball, did she split that one in two?
No.
Or when he was distracted, did she send a second one?
She hit him with what she thought. She was like, "Okay, I'm just going to shoot a fire at you, man. Like, I'm going to go crazy." But she didn't know how to make anything bigger than what was in her hand. So that's just a little insight to how quick thinking she is, how smart she is, and how resourceful she is. She's like, "Okay, well, I can't blow you through the door, but I can burn Perrin's bonds off and he can rip your arms off like Chewbacca."
Yes. So thank you. I did notice that. So I did end up watching this last night. I checked real quick. I think it shows up at midnight New York time.
It does. I watched it at like 9:30.
Yeah, I didn't notice until 11:30, but I watched it last night so I could sleep in this morning a little bit.
That's good. Yeah, for sure. I like that a lot.
So yeah, so I did catch that, but that's why we're recapping, because there's a lot to catch. And then all the wolves come in and just destroy the camp. Like, these wolves take out. Oh, and Valda gets stabbed, like, in a perfect place to totally get him down, but not a death blow by any stretch.
And that's the thing. This kind of sets you up for the White Cloak's dog, Perrin, through the entirety of the books because of this. They're trying to inform the Warderbond a little bit, because it's like, well, if I torture him, you can feel everything that is happening, and it's going to drive you crazy enough to fear for your life and channel. Because the three oaths, they gloss over it really quickly. Aes Sedai are not supposed to be able to lie, because they take oaths that are bound with the power. So it's not that they don't lie, it's that they physically are unable to tell lies. They won't come out of their mouth. They can bend the truth, they can dance around it, they can tell you something that seems like what you want to hear, but it's not the truth.
Like, "My sister, you know, all of my Aes Sedai are sisters."
Right, every stuff like that. It's like, "Well, you know, I you have a sister in this town? Well, my sister's ready."
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, baby!
Yeah, it's time to get a shot. It's 5 o'clock. Also, the first glimpses of Tarvalin and Dragonmount. Oh man, I almost finished.
Oh, Dragonmount,
dude, you have no idea how long I've been just dreaming of that in my head. And like, you know, I was something me and my cousin talk about. It's just like, you know, that was one of the things that Robert Jordan was best at, is really letting you know. And like, they're nailing like almost everything. It's so like right there. The first shot of Tarvalin and Dragonmount is just also important foreshadowing. Volcano, remember?
Volcano. There is a volcano. So everyone else wanders into town alone. Well, not alone, but they're in their separate groups.
Matt and Rand get there first, I think. The Aes Sedai procession is like right on their heels, though.
Yeah, they basically show up at the same time, give or take an afternoon. And I think we go pretty much, probably not straight to. I don't know what we go straight to. But we go to a ceremony where, yeah, Kareen's Warder step in, and he puts on all white, which seems to be tradition, and has a ceremony. Lan is there. Lan and Steppen are obviously very close. And they have a ceremony where Steppen melts the ring down. And that's when it really, really hits him that his Aes Sedai is gone. Lan is concerned about it and says, "You know, I'm going to hang out with you," because he understands, like you said, like it's almost like it's as close as a warder will ever get to touching the source, and then it's taken away from you. And so it seems that like
it's no
life draining.
I mean, that's one way to look at it, definitely, because it's, I guess, okay, this is just going to leave. So Perrin and Egwene get away. and then we'll go back to that in a minute. But they really hit hard at the end of the last episode, the water bond.
Yes.
And the Aes Sedai bond, like Lan says something like, oh, you always get emotional when I drink. They can kind of, once they have the bond, once they're bonded, it's as far as most Aes Sedai, it's for life until it's like death do us part type thing. And it's not necessarily romantic.
Warders rarely outlive their Aes Sedai, as mentioned. It's usually the other way around.
Almost never. Yeah, almost never. And usually they don't outlive them very long because you saw he kind of went like berserker crazy. And then usually they go berserker crazy and they die fighting. But
right.
If they're strong enough, they keep fighting and they don't die. And then it's like a lot of times the Aes Sedai will try to get him to another sister right away because that will kind of fill the hole that it leaves. But because of the bond is created with the power, once the power's gone, it is like something getting ripped out of you. And it's also a closeness of being like your sister or your mom or whatever your relationship that you have with her is the closest relationship in your life. And it's now gone.
So the hole is so large that Stepan ends up seppukoing himself.
Yeah. I was going to mention seppuku. It's definitely like, I was like, oh, he's going to go stick a sword through his gut. I said it even before it happened. He gets the herbs from Nynaeve to knock Lan out because he knows that Lan's watching him. And if he does anything, he'll just take him to an Aes Sedai. And so he's just like, I want to die. So.
And they talk about like maybe him, hooking up with another Aes Sedai. And Stepan's just like, it's not that easy, dude. It's hard to explain, but you don't just go marry someone else. I'm just going to finish up this line a little bit. So during Stepan's funeral, Lan is hit really, really hard to the point where it affects Moraine. Like she's crying because of Lan's pain.
Moraine. And I hated all of that.
Really?
I hated that whole scene. It was so dumb. You can cut this out if you want. It was cool until he starts screaming and like they start beating their chests. And I'm just like, I don't know what's happening right now. They didn't do any of this in the books. And I get what they're doing. I think they're just really trying to hammer home like this bond is for life. And it's really hardcore when it's ripped apart. And it's like, they're like you said.
So this is a perfect segue into like, we talked last time a little bit about like how you have to take stuff from the book and visualize it. So they talk in this episode about the White Cloak tells Egwene, you don't actually have to move your hands to channel. That's just a crutch. And I thought that was an interesting, I don't know if that's in the book or if they did that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Remember I kind of said that. In our first episode, I was like, hey, if you're strong enough and you're trained enough and you're badass enough, you can just be like, phew, phew. And you'll see that. I mean, if they go how the books go later, like, I am so excited. Just like, you're seeing some cool stuff with the power. Like when the one chick, she kind of does one of these and she just shoves the wind almost like a giant force push. And like those dudes just go flying and break the trees. Like, I'm daydreaming. The dragon does stuff on a scale of power that is, let me repeat that so you can get it right. It's like they are dipping their toe in what the power can do right now.
So I think the funeral is kind of a visualization of that too. I think had they just sat there solemnly, I mean, I guess they could have pulled it off and had Lan cry and had Moraine cry, but I think the yelling and the camaraderie, it was all right.
Especially because Lan is so kind of solemn. And show you like how hard it hits because that's the only family they have. Like I said, that was one of the first things I kind of saw besides the kind of like, they really took away our hero's innocence. They were very innocent in the books and now they're drinking and stuff like that. And Matt's backstory. And I get that. They've done that for the people who haven't read the books. They're going to be like, what am I watching? A children's show? What's going on? So I get the things that they've done. I've liked almost all of them until that. I was kind of like, well, that's definitely for all the people who have never read the books. And I made this.
Speaking of a children's show, did you notice when Egwene sneaks up on Perrin at the beginning walking with, did you hear the boing?
Yeah.
Boing! Like there's a total like Looney Tunes sound effect.
I think they were trying to, it was like they just messed up on the, on like, it was like a wagon noise and I wonder if they did it on purpose.
It just perfectly timed wagon squeak.
Spring. Boing! Boing!
What you talking about?
Oh, I'm so excited about Loyal. Anyways, that's coming up.
We meet. So I don't think we get his name in this, but his name, the Ogier, is Loyal. Yeah.
Loial, son of Aaron, son of Halon. He is an Uyghur who's about 100 years old, but he's technically like Rand's age in Uyghur terms. Like, they live very long.
Okay. I was wondering, so they live to be like 1,000 years.
Yeah, they live to be 500-600 years old easily. So,
and he is, yeah, he is big and slow. And
a lot of people in the books think he's a Trolloc because he's so big and he kind of looks, they've definitely made him look a little more human in this, I think, to kind of help differentiate. But I think they look similar to a Trolloc without the horns. You have big tufted ears and stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Not like a Trolloc, but people are ignorant, right? It's like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Just a big, yeah. Yeah, he mentioned that when he first came to town, he walked around and everyone jumped out of his way and screamed and cried and were afraid of him.
It's like, what's Tom Haverford? She's like, where are you from, Tom? He's like, North Carolina. Yeah, I was born here.
No, but where are you from?
yeah, I'm what you call a redneck. So that's kind of like that. They're like, Trolloc. He's like, no, I just am, I don't look like a human. So, but okay, thanks. You guys are rude. you guys suck.
Not every white person is from Mississippi.
But yeah, well, they changed it. I think it's cool. I like how he looks and the way he speaks. Like, the voice that I hear when he speaks is the voice I heard in my head when I read the books.
No way.
It's identical. I swear to God, it's exact. Oh, man. Like, I swear to God, it's, and then like, yeah, they've done a great job.
Yeah, I wanted to look up his voice. I feel like I heard that recently, but no, nothing's changed.
And so far, the only I only recognize three actors from other stuff. Tam is Roose Bolton in Game of Thrones, Rand's dad.
Yes.
Which it's good casting, but I'm just like, Roose Bolton. And Tam is such a good dude. Tam is such a good guy. It's like, that's why Rand is such a good kid, because his dad is such a good dude. And so it's, you know, it's like, duh. And obviously, Rosamund Pike is amazing, dude. She's awesome. And then, I guess What's-Her-Face was in Harry Potter, but you pointed that out. Yeah, the guy who plays Lan is, he's in the Wolverine movie.
Yes, yes.
The actual movie, Wolverine.
The actual Wolverine. So Matt and Rand are in town, and we've kind of jumped ahead of this a little bit.
Okay.
But Matt and Rand are in town, and then the dragon gets shamed through town.
Right.
And the dragon, what's his name again? The Dragon Reborn? Or who he thinks he's the Dragon
he's
Reborn?
He's claimed to be the Dragon Reborn. His name is Loghain Ablar.
Thanks. So Loghain is being shamed through town, and does he actually look up and give Matt a look, or does Matt just feel that? Because they kind of cut back and forth from it, and it's a little bit weird.
Matt? Was he laughing at Matt? I don't know. He's laughing at somebody. Here's my take on it. Go ahead and lay down what you think, and then I'll tell you.
I think Matt felt it more than Loghain actually. So that means it was more like the power inside the power that was remaining inside Loghain was who was grinning at Matt.
Ooh. Dude, then the writers are doing their job, because that's a great take, and I'm going to tell you why once you...
That's about it, and then the scene goes on a little bit, but that's the main takeaway from that scene, is that Matt and Loghain are connected somehow.
Okay, two things? Four things? I don't know. I can't count well.
Matt's 27.
Not a strong subject.
37?
67 things about that scene, really quick, because I'm a bird. So, first of all, they're doing their job with the writing great for a couple of reasons. First reason, the take that Matt's kind of feeling that happening more, that, yes, they're trying to show you how paranoid he's become with the dagger. And he doesn't even trust Rand hardly anymore. And he's kind of losing it. Is it because he can channel, or is it because the dagger?
He snaps it. He snaps it. What's her name?
Not Nynaeve. Yeah, he's like, don't touch me. But no, he goes, he's just in there. So I think that they've done a good job conveying that is this happening? And Matt, has it been Matt's head? What I think is they're A, trying to set up that, I won't tell you how, but I will tell you this. Loghain's probably not done channeling, but he is cut off from the source right now. But I still feel like he can sense it in one of those two guys, if you catch my meaning, whether it's Rand or Matt. Because force users can feel other force users, even when they're not using the force. And Sidar and Sidin is kind of the same way. Men can feel like a kindred spirit with someone they've never met. And if they know what they're looking for, they know why. And so I think that the laugh Matt's taking is like, who's this guy? Why is he laughing at me? Fucking, you know, what the hell? He doesn't even know me. And I think Rand just kind of is like, what's going on? Rand, this in the book hits Rand. He stares Rand down and just smiles at him briefly. He doesn't even start laughing. He just smiles like he knows. And that's what Ren says. And it's like, ooh, because he does. Just doesn't, you know, he knows. He knows. He can feel it. Even though he can't channel anymore, he can feel it. And I think they're really trying to set up where his character is going. And like I said, I think these are things that you will really look back on in the future and be like, oh, dude, they were setting that up in episode 2. You know, and it's like, awesome. Some people at first, they might be like a little bit lost, which is why I love the podcast, because it'll keep people engaged until you get to that stuff, which will make it even cooler, because I like that kind of Pulp Fiction-y storytelling.
Yeah.
Obviously, you do too.
Yes.
Nerds. Let's see. Okay, we got to keep moving.
Leandrin is... Oh, she's a snake.
I can't figure... I mean, she's definitely a snake, but like, I can't figure out... She's trying to like recruit Nynaeve or just like feel her out. I don't understand.
She's just a shit starter. She just... I'm, you know, there's earth, water, fire, air, and I feel like the Reds kind of feed off anger and hostility and chaos. The Reds feed off chaos, you know, and they mentioned, who are the two people they say to Moraine, you know, for someone who doesn't come into this town, you have made two very strong enemies. I'm assuming one of them is Leandrin. I know, I'm sure that they said it in the episode, but I don't remember. Who are the two people that she says at the end when they're hanging out in bed, having a snack? And she's like, you know, unless you're turning my bedroom into your dining room, I'm guessing you have something to say.
Oh, I think she's talking about Suan Sanche.
She says two people, though.
I think it's the...
is it Leandrin and Suan?
I think so. Or maybe Elida. I don't know. They're in the book. I don't... That part I kind of missed.
Oh, she definitely mentions Elida, because she says, okay, like, Elida from Casida, like something that like really rhymed and was really frustrating for me to try to track. So-and-so from somewhere is here and...
So... Okay, I'm going to have to actually watch that real quick and see, because, okay, what I'm thinking it is without knowing it is there is a Red who is very powerful. She is an advisor in Camelin, where I was just telling you about, they didn't go to the queen, who was trained in the tower. And the Camelin queens always get sent to the tower when they're young to train. Well, Elaine is going to be very strong like Egwene, and her mom barely channel. So Elida is their advisor to the throne. And she is there, and in the book, she comes across Rand, and she's like, ooh, this guy's dangerous, but she doesn't know why, but she's also a Red. Elida's a Red. But Suan Sanche is a Blue, and she is the Amerlin Seat, I think is how you say it, and she's like the head Aes Sedai, but she's also, because she's the head, she's of all Ajahs and of none, but she came from the Blue Aja. And what they're really trying to say, I think, in that scene is like, well, you and Suan don't get along. It's like, no, her and Suan are best friends. They were novices together. They were there during the foretelling about the dragon. They were like one.
I got word that the Amerlins returning from Camelin.
Okay. So she probably was there for whatever reason. I'm not sure. Maybe to talk with Elida. I don't know. Maybe
are the Amerlins, is that a person or is that a species?
Oh. I bet. No, that's a person. That's like a seat of power. It's like
Jedi
Council, except there's just one. Like they're like the say Yoda was the head of the Jedi Council, and he's like the big shit. And then everybody else at Jedi Council, they have called sitters. So there's like two or three from each Ajah, and then that's how they make decisions. But there's so much, you'll see. There's so much politics and dissension in the ranks of the Aes Sedai, because there's been a lot of.
Suan Sancha has never turned on a sister without a cause. Who's talking to Moraine?
That's someone named Alana. She is in the books like the keeper of the chronicles, which is kind of like the Amerlin's like vice president type. You know, she's like her right hand person who does, you know, handling tower business together and stuff, her advisor, you know. But I don't know if she's gonna be that in this. But Moraine, when they were novices, they were all novices at the same time. And her and Suan were very close. Moraine and Suan were very close. And they don't talk about it because they've been acting like they hate each other for years, because they don't want to give away the fact that they're working together to try to find the dragon. Because if the Amerlin Seat or the Amerlin Seat, I can't ever say that one. That's really hard. They were to be seen openly trying to find the dragon, it would be like blasphemous, you know?
So it must be. So the two people must be, Leandrin and Suan Sancha are the two people that Alana says you've made, for someone who's never in town, you've made two very powerful enemies, and it must be those two.
Yeah. And Leandrin, I think they're kind of maybe going to, I don't know, she is kind of like her own entity in his thing, but she ends up helping to manipulate Elida. But I wonder if maybe they're just going to leave Elida out of it and make all one character kind of do it instead of having to try to explain how Leandrin is manipulating Elida. They're just going to make Leandrin do initiation, which is fine because the way she kind of exit the books is a way that they could really just work into the story for story progression. And I kind of see, I think that's what.
And then at the very end of that scene, Moraine opens a door to a painting of a woman looking out a window. And I'm guessing.
Wow, I missed that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you have to see that because it's like she's seen something and not, I don't think we're going to see the same thing every time she opens up that door.
What's the counter on the episode?
5148.
Okay. And they're already like the sisters who've heard about what Nynaeve did in the camp. They're already kind of like Moraine doesn't want her to become a novice because she's like, I don't want to be Aes Sedai. I have nothing to do with this. And she's like, well, guess what? If they learn how strong you are, they're never going to like you.
Yes. Yes.
And so there on Leandrin's like, well, I'm not going to say anything, but you better believe those yellows are going to be all over her because she healed three people at once without even touching them or even being near them, which is like unheard of right now. So, okay, so she opens up this thing. What is she looking at? I missed this completely. Really? That's probably why I missed it, because it blinked. I can't even see. It's like a lady.
It's a lady standing next to a window. And I thought for sure they were going to zoom all the way into that painting and then, like, I thought for sure she was going to be like seen into the, if not the future, into someone else's.
You know what I'm thinking? It must be like they talk about tapestries on the wall and like telling stories. I'm thinking that must be like the one girl's in white and the one's in blue. It must be like a novice coming to the tower or something. I don't know.
No, it's just one woman. Look, the woman, that's not a woman in white. That's just that's a window.
Oh, okay. Well, then I have no idea. Yeah, I don't. God, that's weird. I do not know. I do not.
So this episode ends with most people, at least the survivors in town, ready to get some politics are going to go down. And we're going to find out, I think, in the next. Well, I mean, obviously, eventually we're going to. But, you know, we're going to get the structure of the Aes Sedai is going to come into play. And we're going to figure out we're going to start figuring out where people's loyalties are. And I'm sure they're going to change and all that stuff. But the big, I don't know about mystery, but Perrin and Egwene are still out there.
Yeah, my feeling is that Lan was just telling Nynaeve, this is like, oh, we'll find your friends. We'll find them, I promise you. So I have a feeling that as soon as this stuff is over, you know, they're going to run into Matt and everybody else. And they're going to go, you know, oh, you know, where's Perrin and Egwene? And they're going to go out and start looking back. They're going to find them running away from the White Coast and flying. Or maybe the White Cloaks will recapture them after help save them. But they're definitely showing you how like strong and fast and quick Egwene is going to be. And they're finally starting to round out Perrin. I like the kid who plays him a lot, and especially when he's speaking, but his face acting is driving me nuts. He just looks like a big dipshit. And it's just like, he's just like, oh, someone took my toys. And it's like, close your mouth, bro. Like he's you know, I don't know. I get it. They're really trying to capture the character of Perrin, and I get it because he's kind of solemn and he's got his reflect. It's just I like him being able to be his character like that he is, like when he breaks out of the chair and when he starts talking to Egwene about something like really emotionally, and I'm like, okay, like there we go. Like obviously you have to use your words, Zach, because facially you know, Rand, you can see like Rand's really good at the kid who plays Rand Yosha or whatever. He really can see like when he's just acting with his face, he's good at conveying emotions. Same with Rand and Lan and stuff. They're really good at Nynaeve. The chick who plays Nynaeve is fantastic, by the way. You can see her talking to Lan at one point and says something, and you can visually see her face soften to like, oh, like they're actually a good man. Oh, like she really sees him for the first time and you can see it on her face, which is cool.
Yeah.
Like I said.
Yeah, and I think some of the foreshadowing you mentioned earlier, I was just scanning the Wikipedia page seeing if there's any major things I missed. And the last sentence is Lan serves as the primary mourner at Stepan's funeral, deeply moving Moraine and Nynaeve.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean that's some definite foreshadowing. I won't ruin that, but
Yeah.
What do the kids say? Go ahead and ship those two.
No one says that.
Nobody says that. You could call me Fatty the Chef. Nobody calls you that.
No, nobody calls you that.
I do have one note that's important. Emed Valda, shitbag. So make sure you get that. I wrote it in like big capital letters. I'm saving all my notes so like maybe we can put them up on a podcast so you can see how insane my mind is. Just stuff written haphazardly all over a page. No. And then I like go back and rewrite it 10 times. I'm such a, but no, they're kind of fixing parents' dumb face, which I'm glad because I do like the kid that pays them. And especially like I saw some like fan art of him with his hair shagged out like Perrin does because, you know, he's a wolf and it's with the yellow eyes and stuff. I'm like, yes, yes. And I like his acting, but like I said, he's got to work on his facial line.
Here's my note when I saw that Perrin died.
No, seppuku.
No, there's 13 O's there. I seriously, like, I was really starting to fall in love with him in this episode. I was like, oh my God, I hope he's going to be Nynaeve's warder or like something. Like, I like this actor. I like this character. I like everything about him. And then they took him away from me.
Really? See, I liked him until he went and saw Nynaeve all drunk. I thought he was going to do some sketchy shit to her and Lan was going to have to kill him. Because he's all drunk.
But he didn't.
But he was still being sketchy. He dosed Lan so he could kill himself. Well, I totally saw. I was like, that dude's going to kill himself. As soon as he dosed Lan, I'm like,
wow.
I literally said the words. I'm like, ha, seppuku. Oh, there's a sword gone. Yep, it's in his belly.
I had almost hoped he had gone off to do some shady ish just so that he could redeem himself and I could still hang out with
him. Well, that's one of the things Lan always says in the books. He's like, you know, he kind of says it for just a half second. I do like some of the bigger stuff. They're foreshadowing it, but man, they're not hitting you over the head with it. It's just real quick. And I love that. Like, he's like, oh, you know, yeah, my people, Malkier. Yeah. You mean the people that you're the king of? That it's a nation that doesn't exist anymore because it was swallowed up by the Trolloc Wars. And you're the last like remaining true blood Malkier. And they don't say it.
So you probably mentioned this when I was probably looking at Wikipedia. Egwin tells a story about Nynaeve healing her when she was 10. And yeah, and that's another thing where we don't know where she came from. She just showed up in this village. And so we don't know if she's...
No, they said she's like my...
20 or 26.
She said my family, when Lan is praying, she says something. And he's like, I didn't know you spoke the old tongue. She's like, I don't. And he's like, oh, well... What is it? She's like, I don't know. It's what my parents said to me before they hid me in the cellar before our village got attacked and I never saw him again. And he's like, do you want to know what it means? And he tells her what it means. And it's like something, it's the thing that the king of Manithran said to his wife before he went out to die in battle. And she's like, oh, you know. And but she was brought to the town by the wisdom who went to that place to heal who was survivors. And then brought her back and raised her as their own. But Egwene had break bone fever or something. And then
bone fever.
Where was that from? Fucking the Nuge. The terrible person.
I know you got a million more things to say, but we got a million more episodes to record, so.
That's it.